Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Hello and welcome to the program. Today I'm going to be reading out articles from the May issue of Share International magazine. I'll be starting, as usual, with an article by Benjamin Krams, the Master. This was originally published in the magazine in 1983, and it's titled Life in the New Age. Much has been written about life in the future. Much fictional writing is devoted to a description, imaginatively conceived, of the life ahead for humanity. Almost without exception, these writings describe a life and environment dominated by technology and scientifically organized systems. A chilling, mechanistic view of the future is held before the reader, who could be forgiven for preferring the present with all its uncertainties and dangers to such an inhospitable prospect. However, the future need not be so bleak and barren of human warmth as that presented by writers of fiction. That science and technology will flourish, there is no doubt. We are entering an age in which the mysteries of life will be revealed, and the energies of the universe will be controlled through the discoveries of science. Our technology, too, will become ever more sophisticated as it adapts to the challenges posed by these discoveries. We must ensure that a proper balance is maintained and that the achievements and resources of science are channeled along lines that serve rather than are served by mankind. We will help you to do this. Ours will be the task to oversee the development of the new society along paths which preserve correct balance, and naught that infringes human need will receive our recommendation. Beauty and a sense of fittingness will be the touchstone. All that is ugly, mechanical, and harmful to the human spirit will be eschewed. The aim will be to maintain in full freedom and harmony a right relationship between man and his environment, to ensure that every technological and scientific advance is seen as serving better man's needs and knowing better the nature of reality. In this way, you may be sure, the needed safeguards will be built into the new structures. All that pertains to the enhancement of life and the beautifying of its forms will know our blessing. Every manifestation which serves the commonweal will gain our support. A time is coming when man will develop a new relation to his environment. In keeping with his sense that man, nature, and God are one, he will build forms which allow him to manifest that truth. The closest contact and free interchange between all aspects of the whole will be achieved. A sure knowledge of the meaning and purpose of life will replace the present confusion and lead to a demonstration of beauty hitherto unknown. The true, the good, and the beautiful will become a reality in men's lives. All of this presupposes and depends on a change in direction from the present chaos. Naught of good can emerge without a fundamental restructuring of social forms along lines more compatible with human needs. We're meant to realize how much of his God-given potential is sacrificed to the present unholy order. He would delay not one moment in making the needed changes. Were he to sense but an inkling of the glory of that potential, naught would be allowed to bar his way to its achievement. The future calls man to his finest efforts, his noblest aspiration, his grandest vision. Let man build a future in which his sacrifice is not of his divinity, but of his separated self. Let him embrace his brothers in love and make himself whole. So, this next article is by Maryse Guimont, who is UN Women Special Representative in Palestine, speaking at the Palais des Nations from Jerusalem on the disastrous consequences for women and girls following the end of a tenuous ceasefire in Gaza. The title of this article is Collapse of Gaza Ceasefire and its devastating impact on women and girls. The end of the tenuous ceasefire in Gaza is having disastrous consequences for women and girls. From 18 to 25 March, in just those 8 days, 830 people were killed, 174 women, 322 children, with 1,787 more injured. Let me break that down, because these are not just numbers, they are people. Every single day from the 18th to 25th March, an average of 21 women and over 40 children were killed. This is not collateral damage. This is a war where women and children bear the highest burden. They comprise nearly 60% of the recent casualties, a harrowing testament to the indiscriminate nature of this violence. What we are hearing from our partners and the women and girls we serve is a call to end this war, to let them live. It is a situation of pure survival and survival of their families. Because, as they say, there is simply nowhere to go. They are telling us they will not move again, since no safe places anyway. As a woman recently said to us from Day al-Balah, my mother says, death is the same whether in Gaza City or Day al-Balah. We just want to return to Gaza. This is a feeling that is shared by many other women I had an opportunity to meet with during my last visit in January and February. The United Nations says Gaza is facing a food crisis. Another woman from Al-Mirak tells us, we're glued to the news. Life has stopped. We didn't sleep all night, paralyzed. We can't leave. My area is cut off. I'm terrified of being hit. Every possible nightmare races through my mind. This is simply no way of living. Since the 2nd of March, humanitarian aid has been halted by the Israelis. And people's lives are again at risk since the Israeli bombardments resumed on 18th March. The ceasefire, while brief, had provided some breathing. During that time, I had the opportunity to visit some of our partner organizations who were repairing their offices in Gaza City with what material was available. I saw neighbors coming together to clean some of the rubble on their streets, heard children playing, met with women who expressed their fragile hope for peace and for rebuilding their lives. I saw thousands of people on the roads back to Gaza City. And now that hope is gone. For now, 539 days, The relentless war has ravaged Gaza, obliterating lives, homes, and futures. This is not merely a conflict. It is a war on women, on their dignity, their bodies, their very survival. Women have been stripped of their fundamental rights, forced to exist in a reality where loss is their only constant. Cumulatively, over 50,000 people have been killed and more than 110,000 injured. It is crucial to protect the rights and dignity of the people of Gaza, especially women and children, who have borne the brunt of this war. Women are desperate for this nightmare to cease, but the horror persists, the atrocities escalate, and the world seems to be standing by, normalizing what should never be normalized. As we have seen in these 18 months of war, women play a crucial role during times of crisis. However, after all this time, they speak of being trapped in a never-ending nightmare. This war must end. I and others have echoed this plea countless times, amplifying the voices of the women inside Gaza. Yet the devastation deepens. What will we tell future generations when they ask that we did not know, that we did not see? International humanitarian law must be upheld. The systems we established to protect humanity must be respected. All humans must be treated equally. This war is shattering core values and principles. As UN women, we join the UN Secretary-General in his strong appeal for the ceasefire to be respected, for unimpeded humanitarian access to be restored, and for the remaining hostages and all those arbitrarily detained to be released immediately and unconditionally. And that article was taken from IPS, the UN Bureau. Now for another article from Share International magazine, and this is titled "The Mexican Women of La Paz Who Saved Their Village from Ruin." It's by Share Gilmore, who is a Share International co-worker living in the US. In 2017, four women sat around a picnic table in the fishing village of El Mangalito, the neighborhood of La Paz, made famous by the pearl divers John Steinbeck wrote about in his story, The Pearl. The women were bemoaning the polluted and dying mangroves, the drug dealers, the joyriders on ear-piercing motorcycles, the illegal fishermen who were depleting the local shellfish, and the fly tippers, that is people who dump trash in unauthorized places, who left rubbish everywhere and were ruining their village. Quoted one of the women, "Things were bad and getting worse." None of them were highly educated, but they knew they risked losing everything unless things changed. With that realization, they decided to take charge of cleaning up their part of the coast, but they weren't willing to do the work for free. They approached the male decision makers with their plan. The men weren't impressed, but eventually and reluctantly agreed to provide wages for five women. By then, 14 women were meeting around the picnic table. But they accepted the deal, even though the money amounted to only a tiny amount for each woman. It was the principle more than the money that mattered. Immediately, they began placing boulders around the borders of the plantation to keep trucks from coming in to dump rubbish and to deter their motorcycles. They dug channels from the sea to restore the water flow to the mangroves and cleared the rubbish. They even kept watch at the water's edge during the day to tell illegal fishing boats, some of them their own relatives, to go away, and at night to stand up to the drug dealers telling them to move on. By the next year, the area was unrecognizable. The mangroves were green and healthy. The drug dealers had moved on. The fly tipping had stopped, and the beach had returned to its pristine beauty. Further, the fishers of El Mangalito had come slowly to understand the need for quotas to allow the shellfish to thrive. The women named themselves Guardianas del Conchilito, or Guardians of the Shells, and ultimately became a legally recognized community cooperative, which provides a living wage for all its members through its sustainable shellfish project. They also received funding from environmental organizations such as Wild Coast, which is a California-based charity dedicated to conserving coastal and marine ecosystems. Celeste Ortega, Wild Coast's mangrove conservation manager, explained, "We had started talking to the women about the mangroves and how it's not just what's happening in the ocean, but what's happening on the land that affects the shellfish. The trees are a vital part of the ecosystem, and that's the reason the shellfish are here. They attach themselves to the mangrove trees, and that's how they grow." Regarding the operation of the cooperative, one member says, "We do things differently from the men. They had a more individualistic attitude. We work democratically. We have meetings each Monday. We talk things through. We reach decisions collectively." Their environmental work has paid off in ways other than wages too. The children of the Guardians have also been positively affected. One daughter studied marine biology and became the first university graduate from El Mangalito. Another, Guardiana's daughter, is at university studying bioengineering and agriculture. The girls in particular are proud of their mothers and what they've accomplished. But beyond the environment, the biggest changes for the Guardianas del Conchilito have been in their own lives. One member says, "Before all this, I didn't really believe in myself, but now I know I can achieve things. I know it's possible." Then she adds, "The truth is, it wasn't only the mangrove we transformed ourselves as well." And that information was sourced from the Guardian website. I think we have time for a short excerpt from one of Maitreya's messages. This is from March 2008. "My heart is filled with the urge to complete this great endeavour. This will need the assistance of all who love their fellow men. Men must save the world which ails badly. My masters and I will show you the way to do so. It gladdens our hearts to see the start already made by the ordinary people of the world. It is to them I speak now. Raise your voices. Tell the world your needs, your need for peace, your need for justice and freedom, the need for all people to live in harmony, no matter the religion, the color, the race." Well, I do hope you enjoyed today's program. And since we're reading today from Share International magazine, just to remind you that you can subscribe via the website share-international.org. If you go to the resources section, you'll see Share International magazine there. And it's pretty straightforward to subscribe. You can pay via PayPal. It costs roughly 65 New Zealand dollars a year for 10 issues. Otherwise, if you have any queries, feel free to email us at sharenz@yahoo.com. Wishing you all a lovely week.